I grew up in Minnesota, and we had a family mechanic. You know, every family has their family mechanic. My dad was talking to him one time, and the mechanic said, I had the strangest thing happen. And the mechanic's name is Sam. That'll be easier for me. Sam said, Dan, I had the strangest thing happen. A lady came in, and her car wasn't working, so I fixed it for her. And we noticed that when it was done, her brights were on, so he turned her brights off. And she came, she paid for the fixing of her car. She picked it up, she got in her car, and she flipped out. Because the blue light that was supposed to be on her dashboard wasn't on. You know, the little blue indicator light for your high beams? She said, you ruined my car. He said, we didn't do anything to your car. We fixed it. She said, there's supposed to be a blue light right here. And he said, no, ma'am. See, that's for your high beams. And when you put your high beams on, it lets you see better at night, but it blinds the people driving towards you. And so the blue light is to let you know your high beams are on so you can shut them off when somebody's coming. No, the blue light is supposed to always be on, she said. So he showed her, no, if you pull this lever right here, the blue light comes on. You pull it again, blue light goes off. No, the blue light is supposed to always be on. So he turned the high beams on and let her drive away. She did not care about the facts. She didn't care about the reality of the situation. She could see the lights get brighter and higher with the blue light on, and the lights go dimmer and lower with the blue light off, but that didn't matter. She wanted the blue light on. She wanted it the way she thought it was supposed to be, regardless of whether that was right or regardless of whether that matched with reality, irrespective of everything else, she wanted the blue light on. That's pretty much what goes on in the beginning of John 9. So open there with me. If you remember last week, we talked through the entire story of this man born blind who was healed by Jesus, questioned by the Pharisees, questioned again by the Pharisees, kicked out of the synagogue by the Pharisees, and then meets Jesus face to face with eyes wide open to actually meet him. That's the story in general. And it starts like this in John chapter 9. We'll be reading out of the English Standard Version, so if you have that, great. If not, you at least know where we're reading from. As Jesus, this is speaking of him, as he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth, and the disciples asked him, Rabbi, means teacher, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, it was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Having said these things, he spit on the ground and made mud with the saliva. Then he anointed the man's eyes with the mud and said to him, go, wash in the pool of Siloam, which means sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. The neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar were saying, is this not the man who used to sit and beg? Some said, it's him. Others said, no, but he's like him. He kept saying, I am the man. So they said to him, then how were your eyes opened? He answered, the man called Jesus made mud, anointed my eyes, and said to me, go to Siloam and wash. And I went and washed and received my sight. They said to him, where is he? He said, I don't know. If you recall from the end of the story, most of the people in this story don't believe in Jesus at all. So you've got this guy. If we read a little further down, we're going to find out that his parents say he is of age. What exactly does that mean? For our culture, that would mean he's at least 18 years old. Old enough to answer for himself. Okay, so he's at least, we'll say even in that culture, they're going to go 15 years old. So let's say he's at least 15, probably 20 years old. He's been blind 15 to 20 years. And then Jesus shows up, and what we see is by the end of the story, not everybody believes, even though they've seen him blind for 15 years. They don't believe in Jesus when he causes him to see. See, Jesus showed how the high beams were able to flip on and off, back to the mechanic story. And they said, I don't care. The blue light's supposed to be on. It's supposed to be the way I always thought it was, so I don't care what you show me. I don't care what I see. I don't care about reality. What I care about is that it's the way I think it should be. That's a dangerous place for us to live. But let's start right at the beginning of this story, and let's walk through and let's see what goes on, because there's some things that have really caused me thought over this last week, some of them over the last years of my life. As he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth, and the disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? I've met precious few people in my life who break their arm or have some physical ailment and think to themselves, man, did my sin cause this or did my parents' sin cause this? They get a cold, and we assume when you get a cold, you've got what? A virus or a bacteria or something else if it's not a cold. You get the flu, you've got a bug. We don't ask the question, did sin cause this? Why? Because we know it doesn't cause it, right? We know these things are caused by something. And so the disciples ask this foolish question of, well, he's got something wrong with him that's been wrong his entire life. Who sinned? That's not the part that caused me thought over this last years. The part that really caused me thought was Jesus' response. Because growing up, his response made total sense to me, because I never really thought about it. It was not that this man sinned or his parents. You dummies, he's got a bacteria. He's got a retinal nerve problem, right? But he doesn't say that. Look at it. Read what's there in Jesus' response. He never in any way criticizes or chastises their presumption that sin caused the problem. He just says, in this case, that's not what it is. In this case, sin didn't cause the ailment. But he doesn't say that it could never be. Don't get me wrong. I do not think that you shouldn't go to the doctor to get antibiotics for an infection. That's not what I think at all. I think God probably works through those bacteria, through those viruses, through things like that. If he's going to have a result like this from sin, it's going to come through some physiological process. I accept that. I believe that. I'm convinced of it. But I've had to ask myself some questions. When everything seems to not make sense medically, sometimes I've had to wonder, could there be a sin issue going on here that really becomes part of the problem? Okay, even more generally than that, I got to go to the jail on Friday and spend the afternoon doing some Bible studies with some inmates. So we talked about ramifications of choices. We were looking at this passage. And as we engaged with it, as we looked at it and tried to decipher what was there, I asked them the question, you know, what are some of the problems that you've had in life? And we talked about that a little bit. I mean, obviously they were in jail. There was something that they could at least point to that and say, here's an issue. And I asked one of them, I said, have you tried to fix that problem in your life? And he said, yes, for 30 years. And for 30 years, he thought he was doing pretty good. And then just like that, he made a bad choice and it all went crumbling around him again. And now he's looking at up to 15 years in prison. So we started to ask the questions of, how have you tried to deal with this? And see, the way he dealt with it, which is pretty normal for all of us, is we say, here's a problem. I need to fix the problem. So I'm going to address the problem, and I'm going to fix this little bubble in my life where something's wrong. But what we forget is that there's maybe a sin issue in my life or in your life causing the problem. And if all I ever try to do is fix the result of the problem, I'm never addressing what's causing the problem. Sort of be like if I could take a jug or a tub of water and have a never-ending dripping of red food coloring go into this pot of water. Now I have red water. I don't want red water. So in order to get not red water, I take a gallon jug of water and try to dump water into the water that is already in the pot, getting red food coloring in it. And as I dump more water in it, it turns less red. But if I ever stop dumping the water and I find out it just turns red again, because I'm not fixing the problem causing my issue. I don't know what your issues are in life, but a lot of times, frequently most of the time, our issues are caused by a sin component. We've got to address that. Now, that's all an aside to this story, but it's something we have to reckon with because Jesus doesn't, like I said, criticize their presumption that sin causes problems. And if sin had caused the problem, what would have been the fix for the problem? It would have been dealing with the sin. And that's what Jesus would do. But instead he says, no. No, see, that didn't cause this issue. He didn't sin to make himself born blind. His parents didn't sin to make him born blind. There's another reason. I would guess every one of us in here, to one level or another, could say, I've got an issue in my life. There's a problem. There's an issue that I want to go away, and it just won't. Whether that's a physical issue, mental issue, emotional issue, sin issue, whatever it is, we've all got it. It could be interpersonal relationships where you try and try and try and try to fix something, and it just won't fix. We've got those problems. And we wonder why God would allow that to stay in our life. What does Jesus say? What does he say is the reason for this man's multiple years of blindness? A long-term problem that won't fix itself and can't get better. What's Jesus' rationale for why he's got that? Verse 3 says, Jesus answered, it was not that this man sinned or that his parents sinned, but that the works of God may be displayed in his life. So why has he spent 15 years, 20 years, maybe 25 or 30 years dealing with this problem? So that God might work in his life and bring glory to himself through this man. Now, what are the works that he's even talking about? What does Jesus mean when he says that the works of God might be displayed in him? There has to be two. There has to be two based on what we see go on in this story and based on what we've seen Jesus already say is his purpose. He says in John chapter 5 that his purpose was to come and do the work of God so that men might believe. To do the work of God then we have to do the work of God of belief. So belief has to be part of this work. But see, belief isn't really dealt with in this passage until the end. So when Jesus says he's going to do the work of God, what is it? Well, he says some things. And then verse 6 says, he then, having said these things, made mud, put it on the man's eyes, told him to wash the mud off, and caused him to be able to see. Way number one that Jesus interacted and did this work of God to show evidence of who he was he caused the man to be able to see. As a result, the man at the end of the story says, "I believe," and he worships Jesus. That's the second work. The second work is belief, but both of them go tandem. We address and we help physical issues so that people may believe. We take a benevolence offering. In fact, we'll do it next week. Why do we take a benevolence offering? Because people have needs, right? Why do we pray for God to use those monies well, for God to prepare us to use them well and to guide us well, and for God to prepare the people who are going to receive them? Because the truth is, I don't care if I help with somebody's electric bill for a month if they still hate Jesus. My goal is to help them with their electric bill so that I can share who Jesus is and why we've helped, so that they might believe. That's why we do it. That's why we have that benevolence. That's why we use the benevolence in that way. It's the same thing Jesus does here. He helps so that the man may believe. Well, let's look at it theologically. I know theology is a big word that people don't like. It means to speak about God. It's really what it means. So let's think about God and our understanding of him in regard to this passage. I've had more conversations in the last month and a half about God's ability to control things than I have in the last 2 years before that. But the last month and a half, it seems like everybody I sit down with ultimately in one way or another asks me a question of how does it work that God's in control and we have free will? How does it work that this happens and that happens? Who chooses us? Does God choose us? Do we choose him? Do I have free choice? Do I have free will? Do I not? How does it matter? If I don't have free will, then what does it matter that I share the gospel? There's all sorts of ways you could ask this question. But it comes out, and it gets asked, and people ultimately want to know one thing. If God's in control, then why do bad things happen? That really becomes the basic question of it, because if nothing bad ever happened, it'd be really easy to accept that God was in control. When bad stuff happens, it becomes really hard to accept that God's in control. But what happens here in Jesus' words about his Father? What does he say about God? He says that this happened to this man so that the work of God might be displayed in him. He doesn't say directly that God caused it. That's not the discussion for the moment. But this man has that for the reason of God being glorified through Jesus' work in him. God being glorified through Jesus displaying who he was in this man. When God fixes this problem for this man, he realizes he had the problem so he could believe. Maybe this man had the problem because that was the only way he was ever going to believe. Because it's through this problem being fixed that he does believe. I don't know if that's true or not, but maybe. Maybe I could look at my own life and say, wow, I've had these struggles in my life, and I've seen God now work in them. Maybe I had those struggles so that I could learn to trust God. Allison and I finished college. Well, she finished college 2003, I finished 2004, and I was on my way to be a dentist, right? Maybe you heard some of this story. Maybe you've heard all of this story. This part is a little twist on some of it. We moved to Omaha because Creighton is the best chance I have of getting into dental school because it's not owned by the state. It's owned privately. So we moved to Omaha. We don't know anybody in Omaha. We don't know where we're going to live. We don't have jobs. But there's a school that I'm going to take some classes at. So we do what we have to do. We get jobs that seem like they're going to be able to pay the bills, except they don't. Actually, the problem really was this. All the way through college, we knew exactly how much money we had. We used our credit card or our debit card or whatever, and we were always fine because we always spent within our budget. We were okay. We moved to Omaha, and we kept spending the exact same. I mean, you get a new place, there's things that you have to do, and we figured jobs would come in a week. We applied to a lot of places, looked promising. None of them worked. So it ended up taking us about a month before any income came. Do you realize how long, and we used our credit card, so it was the only money we had. Do you realize how long it takes to pay off a credit card when you're just barely making enough to make ends meet? We took 7 months to pay off the $1,200 or whatever it was on our credit card. 7 months. I don't even want to know how much we had to pay off $1,200. We didn't cut up our credit cards, but we just decided not to use them anymore. The problem wasn't foolishness, right? I mean, it was a bad choice, but it wasn't trying to be irresponsible. The problem was that just funds didn't end up where we thought they would end up. So we spent the entire year that we lived in Omaha, and we moved into our apartment on like the 20th of August, 2004, and I believe we moved out on the 19th of August, 2005. So exactly 1 year later, we move out. And you know what we found out in that entire year living in Omaha? We never had any money. I don't mean we never had money like we weren't able to save much, but we were able to do things. I meant usually around the 25th of the month, we'd look at each other and say, how are we going to pay our rent? We don't know. I had a job that was based, ultimately the job I got was based somewhat on commissions. And there were several times she looked at me and said, here's how much money you have to make this week in order to pay rent. Every time that happened, and I needed X amount of money to pay rent, you know how much I got? X plus $3. I didn't get twice as much as I needed. I got what I needed plus about $3 to pay rent. Why share that? What relevance does that possibly have? Other than that, I hated that entire year. Well, financially speaking, I hated the entire year. There were wonderful things that happened there. Most of it was awful. I'll admit that. But we learned something. Coming out of that, looking back at that, we realized that God changed who we were by putting us in a place where we had nothing. He changed who we were. He changed our perspective so that as we moved on and things have changed, we learned some lessons that maybe we would have never learned otherwise. I've got friends who don't live here, and yes, I do have friends who don't live here, and they've never gone through shortage of money. Never been short. It's always been plenty of money to go around. And you know what I found out? They have a really hard time trusting God with their finances. Now, I don't mean that as a slam on them. I'm not putting them down. I would be in that same place had God not put me in a place where I had to do, there was nothing I could do but depend on him to get us through. I needed him to work there, and I found out that he changed me in the process. I don't want to ever go back to having a year where every month I wonder, how am I going to pay for the things I need to pay for? I don't want to go back there. But at the same hand, that year was one of the most formative years in my life. So I wouldn't trade it. But I don't ever want it again. See, this man was blind for 15, 20 years, however amount it was, or whatever amount it was. See, God used that awful element of his life, and when he fixed it, he changed who that man was. So now, looking back at those years blind, if you spend 15 years blind on this earth, and you live for eternity with God in heaven as a perfect body, don't you think that's a good trade? You spend 75 years on this earth here with things going poorly, learning to trust God and spend eternity with him and his son in heaven, in paradise. Isn't that a worthwhile trade? 75 for 10 million? It's worth it. So then when we look at these situations, what we have to stop doing is we have to stop saying, oh, this is so hard, I hate it, poor me. And we have to start asking, how can this be changing me to be like him? Because that's what it's for. Now understand this, you may never see the end of it. You may never see it stop. You may never understand what it did to you until you stand before God in eternity. But I'm telling you that it is doing something. Because just like this man was born blind so that God's work might be displayed in him to change him and to show the world who God is, so God has things in your life and in mine so that he can show his works through us. So that he can do his work through us, so that he can accomplish his end in us. And until we accept that, we will continue to walk through life seeing all of the hard things that come our way, and we're going to say, oh, this is stupid. Why try? Why care? I'm done. But once we change perspective on it and say, I may never understand, but I know that God is doing something in me and through me and around me through what is going on with me. When we change perspective to that, everything changes. And I don't care if that's a struggle between you and your spouse, between you and your kids, if it's a struggle with money or if it's a struggle with health. I don't care if it's that every other day your car breaks down. God is working in you in that situation to do a work in you. Now, our job is to take that work that God has done in us, the evidence of his working in us, and do what with it? Display it. That's what Jesus said this work was for. It's so that God's work might be displayed in him. Now, you cannot display something without showing it. Right? If you go in my office, you're going to see multiple different things up on the bookshelves. One, different golf trophies that I've had playing with some guys in some tournaments that I like to remember. Two, all the little odd Easter children's sermon things that go on up here are on top of my bookshelves. Why? So that I can talk about it with people. In my office in York, I had Allison bought a Lego ship for me. That was, I think, 2,300 pieces. It's about this long and about this tall. And I had it in my office. Why? So that people could say, oh, where'd you get that? And then we could start to talk. I displayed it. I let people see it. I wanted them to see it. Now, if God does a work in you, what are you to do with that? Display it. Show it to people. Let them see the change that God is making in you. Let them see that as exampled in your life through how you interact with people, through how you show care for people, through how you show love for people, through how you show respect for people, through how you show integrity and honesty to people. You show that so that they could see God work and trust him. Now, Jesus does this work in this man. He makes mud, puts it on his eyes, tell him to go wash. He goes and washes. He comes back, and what do people say? Who are you? There's no way you're that guy who used to sit over there, blind, and ask for money. And he says, no, I'm that guy. I really am. I sat there, and I asked, and you would give me... And they have this conversation, and it says he keeps telling them, I'm that guy. Why? Because this is an unbelievable act that Jesus has done. And as we go through the story, we don't see it in these verses because we don't come to the end, but most of them don't believe. They see this happen, and yet they don't care. Irrespective of the realities that they see, they don't believe. Just like the lady with the headlights. She didn't believe that she was supposed to turn the high beams off when somebody was coming. Didn't matter once she was shown how to do it, shown what it was for, and why you would do it, she didn't believe it. People will not believe you at times. You go and share this message with them, they may laugh in your face and not care one bit about what you've got to say. Does that change anything for us? No. No, it doesn't. See, I think Jesus probably knew the Pharisees weren't going to believe in him, even though he does this. You know why I think that? Because he says, I came for a reason. And that reason was to die. And he can't die if everybody believes in him. Nobody's going to kill him. So he knows they're not going to believe, and he shows the work anyway. Why? Because someone might believe. In this case, the blind man does. The blind man is caused to be able to see, and then he believes in this Jesus who caused him to see. That's enough. That makes it worth it. So when we go out from here and we show what God has done in our lives and nobody cares, you know what? Oh, well. But you know what's harder? You know what's way, way, way harder than going out there and showing people what God has done in our lives and ultimately having people not care or not look at what it is that you are and how it functions? It's way harder when people in here won't do that. I've got a friend who's applying for a pastoral position, or not applying, they're sort of going through a process, and he's been at this church for a long time as a non-paid volunteer, right? Which, that's kind of redundant. As a volunteer in this ministry role. Started when he was young, and he'll admit, he needed to grow. But you know what? He has grown. I've seen it. Other people have seen it. He's grown and becoming the type of person, the type of man that you want in this role. And now the elders at that church have said, we'd like to pay you part-time in this role. But in order to hire you as a pastoral role, the body needs to vote on it. People are having a really hard time voting on this person. Why? Because their perspective is, wait, I remember you at 21. Aren't you still 21, just like that person I remember there? I got a chance to preach at the church that I grew up in, which was fantastic. And I had to start by standing in front of these people who knew me when I was 7. Who knew me? 7 was the good times, okay? They then knew me when I was 12, 13, 14. Ridiculous. And I had to start by saying, just so you know, I'm not the same person you knew. So let's start there, accepting that I'm not the same person. Here I am now, 13, 14 years later, coming back. I'm not that guy. And I want you to see that in me. This friend of mine is telling people, I'm not that guy who was 21. He spent a long time being discipled by multiple different people, growing in his faith. He says, I'm not that guy. But the own body that he belongs to doesn't want to accept that he's changing. They don't want to accept that he's becoming someone new, even though they should be able to see the work that God's doing in him. It's one thing when the world doesn't get the work that God is doing in me. It's another thing when we don't get that about each other. And we start treating each other with more judgment than grace. And when I start caring more about judging you for something in the past than giving you grace to allow you to grow, then we can't grow. We can't become who we are supposed to be. God works in lives. We all know that. But in God's working, he's doing what? He's changing. And if we accept that God is working in lives and changing who people are, we then have to accept that people are changing. And I can't keep thinking of you like you were back there. And you can't keep thinking of me like I was back there. And we have to be able to say, I see you growing. That's exciting. I see God working in your life, changing who you are. And that's fantastic. instead of coming to people and saying, I remember who you were 15 years ago. I still don't like you. Okay, maybe that's not quite where we've been. I don't think that's where we've been at all. But sometimes we forget to look at the reality of now, and we only judge things based on the reality of then. But God is working. He's working in you, and he's working in me. He's working in the people around us, and we have to look for it. And when we see it, we cannot be like the Pharisees here who ignore it. We have to be like this man who embraces it and says, I see God working, and it's amazing. That's what we're called to do. That's who we're called to be. And now we get this fantastic life to live that out so that the world can see God in us as he changes us and molds us and grows us. We show that through how we interact with each other, through how we interact with our spouse. We show that through our ability to say, I care more about you, spouse, than I do about me getting what I would like. We show that by caring more about someone else than about us. We show that by saying, no, no, no. See, I don't have to be the person with the biggest piece of pizza. Because we all know what happens. When the pizza comes, every person in the world looks at the pizza to figure out which piece is biggest or has the most of the toppings on it, and then we try to get it. Instead of saying, you know what? I want somebody else to have the best piece. That's how we show this changing and growing that God is doing in us. That's how we show that we are doing something. And there's a word for it. And we're going to stick on this word for it. And we're not going to go anywhere with it for the entire year. And the word is maturing. That's where we show we are maturing. Remember, we're not trying to get to some point of being mature. We're trying to show that we are continually maturing. Becoming more mature. This is how we show that. When God works in us, we show it that way. And then when someone shows those things, then trust that God is changing them. It's your spouse and it's your kids, it's your friends, it's me, it's everyone in this room. It's all of your believer friends. Look for how God works in them. And celebrate it. Let's pray. God, thank you for your incredible love for us. A love that we don't deserve, a love that we can't earn. God, thank you for giving us your Son and the grace that we need to live in him and like him. We love you, Lord. And it's in your name we pray. Amen.